seriously popular.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Now, the trial of the NHS nurse Lucy Letby is continuing at Manchester Crown Court.
She wept as she told the court that she was devastated at being accused of murdering
7 young babies and the attempted murder of 10 others.
Asked by her defence lawyer if she'd done anything wrong, no, she replied.
She told the jury that she'd only ever done her best to care for the babies.
This is a podcast about one of the most anticipated criminal trials for years. It involves the most shocking of allegations, the alleged murders and attempted murders of tiny, premature babies at the hands of a neonatal nurse whose very job it was to look after them.
Lucy Letby is on trial at Manchester Crown Court, accused of killing 7 newborns and injuring 10 more at the Countess of Chester Hospital in Cheshire.
The jury has now been sitting for almost 10 months. The prosecution and defence have finished outlining their cases and the jury have been deciding whether Lucy Letby is guilty or not guilty of the 22 charges that she faces.
I'm Liz Hull, Northern Correspondent for The Mail. I will be in court to report on the case as it develops.
And I'm Caroline Cheatham, a broadcast journalist. Every week, we'll examine what's happened and bring you the details behind the headlines.
This is the trial of Lucy Letby.
So the jury has now been deliberating for almost 90 hours, but they're not sitting today because one of them has an important appointment.
Yes, and as we've pointed out before, they all have to be together when they're deliberating. They can't talk about the case when any of them are missing, but they'll be back tomorrow to continue to decide whether Lucy Letby is guilty or innocent of the charges she faces.
So all we can do is carry on waiting.
Welcome to episode 50. Crisis, comedy, and court reporting.
So, as we said, the jury is still deliberating on its verdicts. The 7 women and 4 men have been deliberating now for 18 days and spent almost 90 hours trying to decide whether Lucy Letby is guilty or innocent.
Both of us are still at court, with all the other journalists, barristers, police officers and families of the babies involved.
You know by now that we can't do anything in the meantime. So today, again, we've got another fantastic interview for you. Someone we've wanted to get onto the podcast for quite a long time. It's Tristan Kirk. He's the court correspondent for the London Evening Standard. And his office is the Old Bailey, the most famous court in the country. Morning, Tristan.
Door.
Oh,
what court announcement is that?
I'm really sorry. That might happen every now and then. I'm in the Old Bailey, so.
Tristan, that's the perfect start to the podcast, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. The court's just getting going here, and they announce things, let us know what's going on.
So, talk us through where you are.
I'm at the Old Bailey, the Central Criminal Court in London, which is probably the most famous criminal court in the country, if not the most famous court in the country. This is where I'm traditionally based, although I cover all of London's various different criminal and civil courts, sort of from the Magistrates Court all the way up to the Supreme Court of the UK. So this is coming from my office within the Old Bailey, where we deal with quite a lot of the most serious cases, murders, terrorism, that kind of stuff. Today, there's an opening of a murder trial with a little bit of a high profile to it. It's possible that I'll go down to Southwark Crown Court, which is nearby, where there is a death by dangerous driving case. It very much depends on what gets going, what starts, and what will deliver a story for today.
Are you constantly planning ahead, constantly scouring the list? Because you really don't always know what a case is going to look like, feel like, sound like, until you're in it. Where do you get your steer from on what's going to be good to go to?
I've got 15 magistrates courts and 10 crown courts. So for me, it's a system of perpetual motion, I think is the best way to describe it. My system tends to be heavily based on the lists that we receive, that you've talked about, magistrates court lists, and then we get some more information from the Crown Court, if we're just talking about the criminal side of it. And it's about identifying a case in the early stages that may well be one that you pick up when it comes to trial in the Crown Court, or if it's a case that looks like there might be a guilty plea, to make sure you pick it up at an earlier stage. So it very much depends on what the case is, and it very much depends on what the how the day is going to pan out. So a case that I covered last week involves somebody who's quite famous, Dustin Lance Black, who's Tom Daly's husband.
Oh, yes, okay.
It's possibly one of the lowest level cases that I can possibly cover. It involves a spilt drink. And he's been charged with assault. Putting aside what people may think about the CPS bringing that kind of a case, it is before the magistrates' court, and it looks like there will be a trial. And so I was there last week for what turned out to be a sort of a pre-trial hearing where we heard the first details. It involves a well-known person. It's an incident that's made the news already. So that's the kind of case that you go along to at the magistrates' court. Another case, you know, that you might get, take a recent example, I suppose, is Kevin Spacey, whereas obviously everyone knows who Kevin Spacey is. You pick that one up first thing and you cover every single hearing along the way because of the high profile nature of it. And then obviously I was there for most days of the trial itself. And then I suppose the third category would be a case that's not got the same kind of profile, but you do want to follow it through. So I'll maybe pick up a case, perhaps a death by dangerous driving case, actually, because I have a particular, you know, interest in that kind of thing and road safety. It's very much a juggling act.
There aren't many papers like yours that have invested in court reporting the way that the Standard does, which is absolutely brilliant, but it's not replicated elsewhere.
I'm a courts correspondent for the Evening Standard, and there are a few of me around. The FT has a very good dedicated court reporter, and actually Reach, those titles have invested in court reporting, and other newspapers are going along that way. I think that a few years ago, there was a bit of a sort of a publicity drive around court reporting, and there was a lot of people, including myself, I'll admit, who said, you know, this is declining, there's less of us. And what came across was a very, very negative view of the profession. I think I'd like to attempt to rebalance that a little bit, that although that is true, the numbers are going down. I actually think that we should be looking at it slightly differently, that everybody's a court reporter. Everybody should be able to go from the newsroom into a court and know what they're doing, even if it's just for that day, just for that week, or for one single case. I think that's how you have to retool the way we look at reporting. Yeah. It shouldn't be a specialism per se where nobody else can do it. It shouldn't be a sort of just this quiet dark corner of the of the journalistic world. It should be something. I mean, the case that you're covering at the moment is obviously of huge interest and importance, but it's a case that you could easily see being covered, and perhaps it is, I'm sorry, I don't know, but by the newspaper's health correspondence rather than somebody who traditionally deals with crime and court.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
But we've talked about, haven't we, Caroline, about how it can be intimidating. I mean, I've been to the Old Bailey, actually, Tristan. I don't think we've ever met, but I did the case when Hashim Abedi was on trial a couple of years ago, the brother of the arena bomber. And there's no more intimidating building, I have to say, than the Old Bailey. It's, you know, if it's not your workplace on a daily basis, you know, it's a big old building, and the courts are imposing and the lawyers are, you know, very serious. They can be quite frightening places, court buildings.
Well, absolutely. I do agree. I mean, it's a fabulous building that, you know, I come to every day, but you can be it can be a little bit overfacing with the great hall and the marble and the austere surroundings, and you know, very serious people dealing with serious cases, and perhaps are not geared up necessarily for welcoming young journalists who don't really know what they're doing or haven't been there before.
All the court staff involved in the trial that we've been doing have been really, really helpful, because obviously they know there's a massive media interest.
It's the big cases where these things tend to go better than, I think, the small cases. In my job for the Evening Standard, sometimes it's about finding the case that nobody else is covering.
Yeah.
And so when I turn up at one of the courts that's lesser covered, taking an example, Harrow Crown Court basically doesn't really get much coverage at all. And you turn up and you do get the occasional time when they look at you as if you've invaded their property. You know, what on earth are you doing here? How can you possibly be covering this kind of case? And they don't necessarily know how to handle you, where to put you, what it is that you're entitled to do.
I think it's also that thing that you turn up and they go, what do you know that we don't?
Whenever anyone tells me this, oh, this isn't a story, I'll instantly go inside. Many times when a lawyer or a police officer official or even sometimes the judge have told me, no, nothing to see here. And it turns out that they're sitting on a belter of a story. So you never know, but it's always a good indicator if they're trying to get rid of you.
Can you tell us a few of the kind of biggest or most interesting cases that you've done that you've really enjoyed doing, or you feel like you've done a public service, I suppose, reporting on them?
The two most high-profile cases I think I've done in recent years are perhaps not the public service, and maybe a lot of people would look at them and wonder why it is that they're going through our courts at all. The first one is the Johnny Depp Amber Heard case, the one that happened in the
UK. I'd love to have done that one.
It was genuinely, every day is a revelation on top of a revelation. It was one of those cases where it was just non-stop jaw-dropping moments, and the things that were coming out, the evidence that was being given. And obviously, you know, you've got two Hollywood stars going at it in the High Court, which, given the way that case has evolved, I'm very glad to have covered that particular case. As we know, and we can still say with full confidence, that Johnny Depp was found to be, you know, what he was said to be. It was a case about domestic violence, and the judge came to the conclusion that's substantially true. And obviously the case has gone over to America and it's gone a different way. Yeah. But I think there's our civil courts, there's a lot of value placed in them. It was a serious case. It wasn't treated as a sort of a trial by media in the way that it wasn't broadcast, it wasn't online. People couldn't watch it going on. So if anyone wanted to follow it, they had to follow the people reporting on it. Mm. And I think that's sort of a core part of the job. The second one, I suppose, that comes to mind is the Agatha Christie case, which is Rebecca Vardy and Colleen Rooney, which a lot of people would look at and wonder why on earth we're spending so much time going over that kind of stuff. Incredibly enjoyable, and I think there was a sort of a guilt-free enjoyment about that. Ultimately, it didn't really matter at all. Those are the ones that stand out as the high-profile ones. I think for me professionally, and perhaps of more value and more public service, are the serious cases. Everybody in this country knows who Wayne Cousins is, and I covered that at the Old Bailey and the Sarah Everard murder, and covered that every step of the way. I mean, that's one of the ones in recent time too. Like, that's a really sort of serious case. Not everybody can be in court, and people desperately want to know what's gone on there and the details of it, because it's incredibly tragic and horrific, but we need to know the details to understand a little bit about why this happened, how this could have happened with a police officer doing something so horrendous. And I think linked to that particular case is something that I managed to dredge up that was in the courts that would have gone unnoticed if I hadn't have done the work that I did on it. And that's to do with the people who attended the vigil for Sarah Everard and were then subsequently prosecuted by the Metropolitan Police, accused of breaking the COVID regulations by attending that vigil that happened a few days after the murder. That is, I know, something you talked about before, the single justice procedure. And it was only through my reporting, bizarre as this sounds, it was only through my reporting that at least one of the people who was prosecuted found out that they'd actually been prosecuted. I'll talk you through briefly. The vigil had happened, as everybody knows, where the police had gone in, made arrests. And some of those people who'd been arrested had been told, you may well face a penalty under the COVID regulations. Then we moved on many, many months. I can't remember exactly how much. It may have been something like 18 months. And then the police were gradually working their way through all of these COVID fines that they handed out. And they got to the people who'd been arrested at the vigil, and then they started prosecutions against them. But it was only through my reporting on that, checking the lists, finding the cases, getting hold of the paperwork, I was able to bring what was going on there into the open. And yeah, as I say, I spoke to at least one of the defendants who said she had absolutely no idea that a case was ongoing. In fact, had concluded, she'd been convicted and fined until I told her about it. And then subsequently, those cases were overturned and the convictions were quashed.
Was that because the letter had gone astray, or she'd not got the letter? Oh, I mean, or were they simply not informed?
Well, the problem with those kind of cases is that they basically get an address at the time of an incident.
Right.
And then they leave it, I don't know, sitting in a drawer for a while. It just gathers dust, and then they send out these letters. Yeah, I mean, you're relying on the postal system. Did they get a letter? Did they not get a letter? I've spoken to enough people now who've been dealt with through the single justice procedure to know that those letters do not get through sometimes. I recall having a very entertaining conversation with the former footballer Bruce Grobbelaar, and he had no idea again that he'd been prosecuted and was talking about the skullduggery of it all. But I mean, he's the kind of person who actually travels around.
He does.
So it's perfectly conceivable that you know, you wouldn't go home for a few weeks, you'd miss the letter, and then you're in court. There's a lot of evidence to say that people are nowadays convicted and fined without knowing that it's happened.
We talked to Mark Hanna earlier on in the podcast about single justice procedure and about how difficult it is to get the information. So we'll credit to you, Tristan, because it isn't,
absolutely,
you know, it does take a lot of work, because it's phone calls, can I have this list, can I have this list, and you're kind of cross-checking, aren't you? It's not an easy job to get to the bottom of those kind of prosecutions.
I mean, the system for me is really, really broken in the way that it was introduced. You shouldn't have cases in closed courts, full stop. But if you're going to do that, then what you should do is you should make it as easy as possible for people to know what it is that you've done.
Yeah.
For me, having got myself into a position where I understand the system, there is a level of ease to it. I know what I'm doing, but I don't think that there's been any attempt or any proper serious attempt for the courts to really promote the idea that journalists can have routine access to these kinds of things. So when I say it is and it isn't, it's like if you know what you're doing, yeah, it's actually quite easy. But if you don't know what you're doing, I really, really pity anyone starting from scratch.
You talked, Tristan, about covering the Wagatha Christie case, and some people might say, well, you know, why was that something you gave your time to or the courts gave their time to? Actually, we see awful situations in the courts, but it's not all like that, is it? There are some lighter moments.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I don't think I could do the doom and gloom all of the time, and I like to sort of mix it up. And so you have a varied coverage. So you cover the serious cases, you cover them well, and they're more important, let's be honest. But what you're also looking for as a court reporter is the unusual, the quirky, the funny, even, dare I say it.
This is showing my age a little bit, Tristan, but I actually, when I was quite a young reporter for the Mail, I did a few days on the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire trial. The coughing major, absolutely fantastic to do, to be honest.
I can only express jealousy to have missed what sounds like an absolutely superb, yeah, superb case. Oh, whenever I ask me, you know, what do you, you know, what's the funniest case? Two of them always spring to mind. The first one is, it's a case of a man, an older gentleman, who'd set out into the countryside one day in North London, gone out in pursuit of some animals. And there was a couple having a picnic in the field who looked over and, to their horror, seen this gentleman only wearing his socks, pursuing a sheep across the field. And when that didn't work, he went off in pursuit of another animal, I think a cow. And so this scene unfolded in front of the couple. And the reason that anybody at all heard about it actually is because this gentleman not only was prosecuted, but pleaded not guilty to having done it, and ended up in the Crown Court having a full-blown trial about this all. And so all this came spilling out. We would never have noticed the case at all, apart from the fact that he chose to have a Crown Court trial.
He just quietly pleaded guilty.
Exactly, yeah, he could have got away with it. The second one, which always makes me chuckle that this happened at all, I remember looking at the court lists when I was at the agency, and seeing that a man had been charged with, outraging public decency again, for having sex with a fire extinguisher. And at that stage, the mind boggled as to what it was that he'd done. And, give the full explanation. But anyway, this man had emerged wearing no clothes, intimately with a fire extinguisher from a sort of an airing cupboard in the travel lodge, after having a little bit too much to drink. And it always makes me chuckle to think of that.
Please spare us the gory details.
Yeah, yeah. I cannot imagine what happened in that airing cupboard.
The things that people do, and they end up in court.
Tristan, thank you so much for your time.
Brilliant.
It's 9:03 on Monday morning, and I'm sure that the cases will no doubt be starting bang on 9:30 at the Old Bailey. Thanks ever so much.
Thanks
for your
very
time.
Much, everybody.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Nice to see you. Take care. Bye.
That's it for episode 50. As soon as we have verdicts from the jury, we'll bring you a special episode of the podcast.
We've no idea how long that'll take, but we'll bring you their decision as soon as it happens.
You can give us a rating and you can share the podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at Lucy Letby Trial, or follow me at Radio Caroline, or send us an email at thetrialoflucyletby@gmail.com.
See you then.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.